sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
It's a new year, and we got a Rocky Mountain high in Colorado. First week of the year in 2014 is down. The CES show is beginning, and we have a big week for Eco. Thanks for joining me. We have lots to talk about on episode number 346 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hello, sports fans. Wrong show. Andrew Horowitz here. How are you? I hope you had a wonderful New Year's, and you are making plans for even a better 2014. Every year should be better, hopefully, for you than the last. At least you can try to do so. And we are going to try to do so as well here by having some new content mixed in. And we will update you as that occurs. We have a whole laundry list of things that we're looking to implement. Like, for example, on the site, we're going to have the Dow Jones 30 on the disciplinedinvestor.com, the Dow Jones 30 on a daily basis, looking at which stocks are actually the performers and outperformers for the day, so you can see it ticking, and really what is making up the Dow's movement. So we're going to have that live soon. And we'll have a variety of other things like that. We're mixing in some really cool APIs and data from a variety of different sources to do that. We have some new Google spreadsheets that we worked on to provide an active and updated a series look at the different stocks on DH and Plug, for example. And there's just a lot of things happening. So it's the beginning of the year. People are starting diets and people are making resolutions to quit this or to start that. It's my favorite time of the year to just drive by. Unfortunately, just drive by the workout facilities and the gyms, and you see all the cars just piling in from now through, I don't know, about 2 weeks, 3 weeks from now, and all starting to start to thin out after that. All of a sudden, you start to see that the parking lots are a little more available. And you know why that is. Because we're all trying to do something, but we fail miserably. But, you know, resolutions are good. I've never been a big fan of them because they kind of seem to be spontaneous, spur-of-the-moment things that you want to do. It works out much better if you make a commitment. And I'll tell you something else. Write it down. Now, I bring that up in a show not to talk about any of the, you know, morals and psychology behind any of that, but really to talk about how to implement that when you're investing, because the same thing happens when you invest. You make a plan up, possibly you jot it down. Maybe you go so far as looking at some charts and maybe you forget about it. Maybe you invest in something and then you forget about that too. But one of the things you can do is when you make a commitment to a particular investment, a security, an ETF, whatever it is, if you write down the plan of action, I find it works out much better. If you know where your levels that you're going to buy, you're going to sell, where you're going to add on or subtract, it works a lot better because what happens is that now you have a roadmap. So bring that back to the whole idea of a diet for the new year. You know, you make this resolution that you're going to go on a diet and you're going to lose X amount of pounds. And here's your plan. You're going to eat only chicken and only fish. You're not going to eat anything fried. You're not going to have your carbs and all that. So you have that plan. All of a sudden, Saturday night comes along and you're confronted with the fact that the restaurant that you go to has nothing available for you that is on this particular diet that you're on. What do you do? Well, if you don't have an exact plan written out, then you probably went to the restaurant without thinking about it. And now you're confronted with something like, we'll bring that back now, this whole idea to a stock, drops 10%. What do you do? Do you sell? Do you buy? What are you doing? Well, if you don't have a plan, you may not know what to do and you may make the wrong decision. So you wouldn't be in that situation. Because maybe if it dropped, that was something where you wanted to actually buy more of. Or maybe you should have stopped out of it sometime prior. So when you're thinking about your investment plan and you're planning practices and tactics for 2014, I want you to think about maybe having either a yellow pad that's strictly for the ideas and then the commitments, or maybe a Word document or whatever you're going to write it down in, an Excel spreadsheet. Or if you have a trading platform where you can actually put in exact information, for example, when we're going to look at a stock, what you could do is you could have it set up that you have an alert and a note saying, okay, at this price, I'm planning on doing this. So when it pops up, you know exactly what to do. There's no surprises. Of course, you could put in the trade beforehand. So for example, if a stock's at 40 and it drops down to 30 and you say, okay, you know what, I'm going to get out of it at 28. But if it levels off at 30, that's where I'm going to add on to it. Well, at 30, what do you do? Well, you get an alert, or you can actually have an order in. You have an order to buy again at 30 and 28, you're stopped out. So just some ideas on how you can make a smoother process to your investing this year and give yourself a little bit less anxiety and inability to make decisions because you're confronted with all these moving parts on a regular basis. As a matter of fact, we have earnings season that starts this week on Thursday with the earnings from Alcoa on the 9th. And that is going to be a very interesting time because what we have seen, as we've talked about, is the revenues for companies have been coming in. And yet at the same time, earnings are okay. They've been good. Some companies great, some companies not so great. Expectations have been brought down. Companies' outward guidance has been tempered a bit. And now here we are with the fact that there is some tapering that's going on. And we have, at the same time, the economy growing better than expected. There has been discussion over the weekend by a lot of Fed chairs from the various regions talking about how they want to look at winding down the QE, the bond buying program, even faster than what's being presented right now. There's only one or two of the group that said that they probably want to keep it as it is. As a matter of fact, Bernanke, who is retiring, and Janet Yellen is going to be confirmed very, very shortly. Bernanke even said that a lot of the economic headwinds have subsided. So now, if that's the case, and we don't get earnings that are doing really spectacular, that's where a problem comes in. Now, at the same time, you have to realize that there has been an incredible amount of PE expansion on a lot of stocks. And when that happens, there is a need for the continuation of a growing trend of not only revenue, but of earnings, because what you have is the market expectation is very, very high. They've overshot maybe on some stocks where they should be in terms of price relative to their earnings growth and relative to the outward look in the economy. Now, when that happens, basically, you have the opportunity for pretty much opposite of what we had the last few quarters, which was a mediocre growth rate of the economy and the outlook was questionable and a lot of headwinds. And you had stocks that were beating on the lowered expectations. So you add that to the amount of liquidity that's in the market due to the fact that the Fed's pumping in all this money and still is. You got a recipe for what did occur. So we'll be reporting on all of the action when it comes to earnings. You know, we have first Alcoa and a few others. Then we start going into the banks. That gets hot and heavy. Now, technology is going to be very interesting because you've seen a lot of the older technology starting to level off a little bit. You know, with many companies that were leading, like the Apples and in the phone business and Google, et cetera, really doing incredible job at maintaining a high level of growth. And then you have the other ones like a BlackBerry, for example, that is, you know, obviously dying and withering because of the transition to smartphones as they've happened. Now, at the same time, you have the CES occurring this week. And with that, there's all sorts of fun that we'll be seeing. For example, we got this wearable technology that's probably going to be really being shown and presented at this computer exposition that goes on over in Vegas. Probably we're seeing a tremendous amount and probably more of that and things like 3D technology printing is going to be pretty incredible. And there's going to be things from companies like ARM Holdings, Atmel, Maxim, Silicon Labs, InvaSense. All these companies are coming out with something wearable. Now, we joked around about the smart wig on the DH Unplugged show, which actually, if you look it up, Sony does have that. It's not a joke. Maybe it is a joke, but it actually is something, I guess, in development. I don't really understand it, and I'm not looking into it because it seems so ridiculous. But the big thing is going to be, you know, this wearable technology that's going to be out there, and we'll see if that is actually going to spark any interest. We're also going to see a lot more of the very, very high resolution, the ultra high def TVs, smart TVs, very interesting to be looking at. So there's a lot of companies that are going to be working in there, like AU Optronics, Corning, LG Display. And then you're going to have things, for example, like the 64-bit smartphones and blendable devices, tablets, and things that will be able to be working together. But I think the big issue you're going to really be seeing is some of the 3D technology that is going to be very, very hot. And also the other thing that probably is finally going to be, more usable because of the size limitations that were before, is going to be solid state for computers. That is, I mean, obviously for smartphones and small devices being used all over the place. And you got companies like SanDisk and possibly the hard disk manufacturers, Western Digital, etc. So that's going to be pretty much, I think, a real interesting time when we start seeing throughout the week all the different things you're going to be seeing from the companies and their announcements and the follow-on moves for some of the stocks, and for some of them that may not be so impressive, that maybe really have topped out on what they're putting in right now. Qualcomm comes to mind as one of them that may not actually have anything major. And they're really just going to be looking at some of their current products, like the Snapdragon product they have. And it should be, you know, kind of an interesting time to see how that's taken and if there's any other potential competition. We'll see what Intel is going to have and what their tone is going to be from sales over the holiday season. So there's a lot of technology that will be happening right in the beginning of the year, right now. And I think that's going to be setting a tone for what's going on with the beginning of the year. But we did see a down market the first time in many, many years for the first week, first day, and first week of the new year. And we're going to have to see. I think it's going to play out into next week, which is a pretty big week in terms of the beginning of earnings season. You got technology, and also we have a lot of economics coming out. Now, don't forget, this is the first week that we're going to see the big ones, right? We're going to see unemployment, which is on the first Friday of the month, and we're going to see at least expectations are for a 7% rate of unemployment and 195,000 jobs added. And we're also going to see the ISM non-manufacturing that is coming up right in the beginning of the week. Surveys looking for about a 54.6, which is higher than the last. And that's going to be something that's going to be also very important. We have another Fed meeting, release of the minutes from their December meeting, which we're probably going to see that there was more dissension and more talk about tapering, et cetera, is why they obviously did so. But, of course, the big thing is going to be this whole week of the employment ratios that are going to be mixed in. And then the Fed, I mean, this whole thing is really starting to brew. If you noticed, we hit 3% on the 10-year last week, the first time since 2011, I guess it was. So, you know, the bond buying program that was meant to bring down rates, which it did, and to spur on new mortgages, refinancings, reissue of debt through the companies out there, and to make the balance sheet stronger, all, you know, recapitalize banks, et cetera. Now is maybe starting to wind down. Now, just when you think that, and you think that maybe some of the stimulus is kind of coming to an end, and, you know, hey, it's been 4 or 5 years, we've seen just an incredible amount of policy towards unemployment really being put in there, you know, and now we saw that the recent budget took out the remaining, or didn't renew, I should say, the remaining emergency extension of benefits for the unemployment rate. Well, guess what? President Obama is now calling on Congress to restore the unemployment benefits and make it a priority because this is what he says, a vital economic lifeline. Now, I was thinking about this, and all right, you know, if you don't have a job and you don't have any income because your unemployment benefits ran out, you know, that's awful. It's terrible. Then I'm starting to think about, now, wait a minute. there was a time that we only had a 26-week unemployment payments. Now it's been extended and extended. How long does that go on? And what is the normalized, quote-unquote, normalized unemployment rate until we get to a point that we are no longer providing that? And basically, this is what I think, that there is a component of the unemployment benefits that are clearly very important and provides an essential part of the process of transitioning from when either a company is downsizing or it is, you know, something where maybe you moved, or it could be a family issue. It could be 100 different things. And of course, I think that the transition temporary benefit is very beneficial. Now, on the other hand, I start thinking about this, and I start thinking about that the elongated and extended benefits, where is the benefit there? Okay, well, if you have a deep and very severe economic slowdown, a contraction that really throws the entire economy into a spin, and you know, you see the unemployment rate driving higher, like, you know, that you don't see in a couple of decades. Well, then it makes sense to have these expanded benefits. The only problem is, I question whether it stifles the entrepreneurial spirit in people. I mean, think about it for a second. You know, if you have the unemployment benefits, well, at least you know that you have some benefits for a period of time and you can make the transition. And when they run out, you know, you're going to be aware because you're going to know in advance. And you can say, you know what, maybe what I should do is I should start thinking about either finding a job if I can. And if I can't, maybe starting my own business, maybe, you know, inventing something, doing something. Because I know personally that there have been times in early days when I didn't have a job. Well, you had to do something. You had to scrap around and find something to do, to find something to make money. Now, you may say, well, there's no money here. There's no money. I can't find a job anyway, anywhere. Now, the other problem is because maybe your skills have now become a little outdated. You haven't been working for a year and a half, and that's really scary. So maybe you go back to school a little bit. But the problem is that with the extended unemployment, you are creating a lot of unskilled for their particular their job, unskilled workers that are no longer able to be employed because they've been out of work for so long. That's a problem. So I kind of wonder how we blend this into the concept of normalizing the capitalistic society and economy and country, as well as markets that we have. Because right now we have a lot of government help, and that's warping things a bit. So now we have to think about, okay, when do we get back to normalization and how does that affect things? Now, one of the things I've talked about, which still is not being talked about at the level it should be, is the whole idea that you have this cannibalization of consumption by the fact that you have all sorts of automated processes, robotics, and the need for companies to trim down their expenses and beef up technology or other services that can provide them a very low cost process of providing whatever product they're either manufacturing or selling. Now, we see this all the time. Company after company is laying off people because they no longer have that position available. Well, the argument on the other side is that, okay, well, that happens. All these people need to be employed to create and make the various technology or robotics or automation that is needed by these companies. But after a while, the same thing happens. Those companies now become much better organized and they become much better and much more efficient, and jobs dry up there. So there isn't a one-to-one ratio of when, for example, you lose somebody in the toll plaza. Great example. Toll plazas, you just zip right through them right now because you have a little sensor and it charges it, and you don't need anybody standing in the tolls anymore, and the lines have been reduced and it's a lot better. Well, are you going to tell me that all the people that are going to be, and this is a smaller group, but all the people that were toll collectors, now the one-on-one ratio of moving into technology that creates these kind of systems? I don't think so. Maybe installation to a degree, possibly, but it doesn't shift on a one-to-one basis. It's just not a swap of one to the other in terms of numbers. That's the whole point of what's going on. That's why some of these companies are doing so well. You know, the advent of technology in terms of personal computers, handhelds, tablets, has really made a lot of other things, a lot of other companies, a lot of other jobs extinct. How many file clerks aren't needed because we do scanning? How many companies that make filing cabinets aren't needed anymore, or file folders, or little labels? On the other hand, you have shredding companies that are doing very well because the things are being thrown out. And then what happens to the shredding companies once everything is shredded? Well, they're not needed anymore. So there's a cycle. It's a natural process. All I'm saying to you is that it does seem to me that there is a structural and a fundamental employment situation that is occurring rather than just a simple put people back to work. Because if people going back to work because companies were profitable and sales were higher, if that's the calculation that you're using to assume jobs are going to be created, well, you know what? We just saw that the household wealth has eclipsed the last level of highs. We see that companies are earning, you know, there's a lot of people going out there and telling you, hey, companies are earning more than they ever earned in terms of total. GDP has been continuing to expand. Well, if that's the case, why are so many people unemployed? Why do we still have an employment problem? It's because there is a gap. There is a component of the current economy that does not need people to do the jobs. And not to mention emerging markets, where a whole different discussion has to be brought up. Now, let's talk about, I mentioned Rocky Mountain High. Colorado has now approved marijuana for not only for medical use, but also for recreational use. That's kind of interesting. We'll see how that's going to play out. There's a lot of interest now, and we see that Governor Cuomo in New York is now looking at putting in the use of marijuana for medicinal purposes, which is a change. And now we're probably going to see a lot more states that are going to hop on the bandwagon to do so. The question is, where do you go to find maybe the opportunities there? We'll see. I mean, there's a company called MedBox and a few others that have some part of that, and maybe you can buy, I don't know, Ziploc baggies, you know, the companies that make the supplies to some of this, and maybe Zippo, or you know, crazy things. Those aren't publicly traded necessarily, but you know, those are the things. I mean, maybe you want to buy companies that produce potato chips for the munchies. I don't know. It could be interesting, though. We'll see what happens. The other question you have to ask is, how is this going to play into maybe the alcohol usage? Is if this is going to be a situation that spreads and there's going to be a lot more use of this, is that going to maybe impede on alcohol? We'll see. But there's a lot of things happening, you know, in the beginning of this year that I really want you to pay attention to. You know, the other things that I think is important to take a look at is what is going to happen when we see all the effects of the commentary from Plaster and Dudley and Bernanke over this weekend. There was just a lot of talk into next week. And also we have an ECB rate decision is going to be coming out this week as well, because right now we had seen that the euro was really moving. I mean, incredible move on the euro compared to the level of economic expansion and the strength of the entire region and the economies. And that was because pretty much the yen was being sold off and the dollar started being sold off, which was interesting after the taper discussion, although it came back a bit. But the euro still seemed to be moving up dramatically due to the fact that the idea is that, well, you know what, they're not going to cut right now. They're still having some worries about, you know, potential inflation. Whether or not it's going to happen is another discussion. So that's something that is really going to be watched. The other thing about technology, I just want to get back to this for a second, is that when you look at technology right now and you look at what the Edward Snowden announcements have done and the release of the NSA data and some of the countries' responses about possibly, you know, limiting their use of technology that is created in the U.S. because they are worried that there will be a substantial amount of spying from the NSA and embed it into various components, that may have some kind of an interesting impact on companies. And in particular, you want to look at the server providers, maybe chip providers, and definitely software providers that are internationally, domestically created, but international providers of that information. You know, it could be whether it's an Oracle, or it could be Microsoft, Apple even, for that matter. You have to be very interested in watching what's going to happen with this, because it is something that is very concerning from the other side. We may not see it here as that much concerning, but there's a lot of talk and a lot of tape you can read on how they're concerned over there. Once we were snooping in on Angela Merkel's private cell phone, and we have the feelers out there all over the place, it seems, there was a red flag raised on, hey, how far are we going to allow for some of this technology to go? And if the U.S. government has the access to some of the technology, and if some of that technology is being embedded, well, then it can go to the NSA. And if it goes to the NSA, I mean, you just take this down that road, and that, you know, can make some countries a little bit squeamish. So there were some questions that came in about last week's show about we had Frank Herzio on, and there was a couple of questions about some of the things he said. One of the questions that came in, actually, there was two different people that asked a very similar question, was that, you know, Frank was talking about, hey, one of the ways to look at companies is if they're trading below cash value, if they're, you know, really what I think he was talking about was trading below their book value. Book value is assets minus liability. So if you have a company that has, let's say, $1 billion net worth, if you will, you know, assets minus liabilities, $1 billion, and they're trading at $950 million, well, there's some level of safety there if there's not a major cash burn. Because if you think about it, you're really not seeing a PE that's, if it's not too high, and you're not seeing a book value to price that's over. And therefore, if you think about that, if the company is to be sold, broken up, or just absolutely valued at what the core value of the company is without any earnings growth, well, you still have those assets there. So if you have a book value that is above your price, that's kind of interesting. And again, you have to look at the totals there. So it's the price to book and the price, and you look at that, and if it's trading below that, or if it's trading below its cash and they have very little debt outstanding, I mean, any of those combinations are very important, and you could screen for those kind of things. Price to book is one of the ones that you want to look at. Possibly enterprise value is another one that you could look at to see what the valuation of the company is, and then compare it to what the valuation is of the actual market cap. And that's very interesting to look at, because you get that margin of safety in there. It's embedded right in there. So most companies are not going to find a lot of companies like that. There's some that will be in certain sectors that may trade much closer to book, but, you know, banks, for example, trade close to book. But when you look a little bit further and you look out at, you know, what he was talking about, some of the shale plays and some of the oil and gas companies, he was talking about, you know, how they are cheap at some rate. Well, that's something that you want to take a look at. And then we talked about, of course, last week, the cloud companies that are very interesting. And we also talked about the e-cigs. If you haven't listened to that episode, I really encourage you to do so, because we talked about the whole e-cigarette revolution and the whole idea that the potential for a real game changer here when it comes to the electronic cigarettes and the way that they're being accepted or not, and the way they're being bought up by other companies, you know, like a Lorillard that bought Blue, and these companies that are being, no pun intended, rolled up into the other companies, the bigger distributors of actual tobacco cigarettes, and they're doing it for offensive and defensive measures. Very fascinating place to be looking, I think, this year. Now, oftentimes you do see a big rotation happen. You see what was good maybe for the last couple of years, the last year or so. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be the top moving forward. Oftentimes what happens is you see this rotation go on. So you may see that precious metals were at the bottom of the pile for a year or so, and maybe the miners were in bad shape, but technology was at the top, and, you know, technology will take that run, and then you kind of look down the list of the sectors, and oftentimes what you do find is there is a rotation that goes on, because a lot of managers in the institutional area use a reversion to the mean or mean reversion strategy where they are going to rotate. So if they made a lot of money in the technology in one year and now their models are topped out, they take the profits off it and they put it into the ones that where there was a lot of losses. So therefore, they can even out their portfolio back to the targeted model that they had set out previously. Now, will we see that? Well, already we're seeing, interestingly, gold start to pop a bit here in the beginning of the year. We're seeing the technology has been a bit soft. It's only a couple of days. Don't get me wrong. It's just starting. But watch for this and see the trends. Watch for the rotation if it occurs and if it is anything more than just a quick rebalance or it's going to be a change in the structure of the market leadership. That's really what you want to look for. And that takes place over a period of time. You're not going to see it over one day or a week. You know, give it about 4 to 6 weeks or a little bit longer than that. Start looking at if there's a trend, not just a softening and a little, you know, nothing but a trend, a significant trend where you see the outperformance of one sector compared to the core base, let's say using the S&P 500. You look at the base of the S&P 500 and the returns and the relative performance of the sector. One of the places you can go, stockcharts.com has a really cool little sector rotation thing if you can find it there. And what you do is you can actually, there's a little slider on the bottom, there's bar charts, and you can see the relative performance of the sectors compared to the S&P. And you can slide it wide and say, okay, I want to look at a monthly or a two-month view of this, and then slide it and see how it changed and how the chart has changed dynamically with the over or underperformance of the various sectors. So that gives you a good clue in terms of what, you know, what goes on with that. So I think that's one thing that you really want to start paying attention to in the beginning of the year. Now, since this is the first of the year and kind of a couple of weeks, with not a lot of data, not a lot of things going on, everybody cleaning up, slowing down, getting ready for, and then moving on for the new year, we're going to keep this show very short today. I'll mention a couple of things we're working on. We've been working on for about a number of months, if not 6 or 8 months, on a strategy. Now, the reason why we're working on is that there's just a lot of intricacies about what goes into this strategy, how it is fired, and, you know, in terms of when a buy or sell or short comes out. It's based on the S&P 500, and we wanted to use a core of a highly efficient market, and there's only a few of them out there. You know, you could look at the Russell 1000, the Russell 2000, maybe a little bit less efficient there. The S&P 500, the Dow, not really. You know, and you can look at the global markets, something that has efficiency where there's a lot of regular trading interest, where there's a broad base of underlying securities, and where there is a normal curve, if you will, to the distributions. And one of the big things is we wanted to find out the highest level efficiency without drawdowns. And anyway, there's a lot of different techniques or calculations that went into this based on several different factors, some of it being the things that we use, for example, on trigger charts, which is the market profile and volume and price information. Then we have things like a variety of different specialized oscillators and trending indicators in there that we blended together. And we've kind of been pacing ourselves and building this for some time now, that we had a core that we were looking at and we built it. And it's pretty much done right now. We're going to just do a few more testings and make sure that everything lines up correctly and that the in-sample, out-of-sample data, all those things that we have to do to test these things to make sure that there isn't just a particular time frame that it looks good and others it doesn't. It has to be good over time. And this is a swing trading type of strategy where, you know, you'll buy in and maybe be out in a month or a week or 3 months, and sometimes it'll hold until you get a very strong signal to move in the other direction. And it favors the trend. It favors, it does do shorts and longs, and shorts are taken out once a long goes in. And but then again, a long may not be taken out for a short, but it'll be sold. Both sides have to have criteria that meet. And the nice thing is that it's very easy eventually to use in terms of implement. What you'll do is you'll use an ETF. So you can use the SPY. And the inverse of that, if you want a short of SH. So we're going to have that coming out soon. We'll, if you are on the Disciplined Investor mailing list, you will get notification of that. And you can just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. In the top right, there's a little box for your name and your email. Just pop it in there, and we'll send you out. Once available, we'll send you out that information and anything else that's kind of playing out and what's going on. And then actually, you get daily emails of whether it's the podcast or articles that we write or happenings or news, that will give you a daily email if you choose it to get that as well. So you get that right into your email box, and it's nice and condensed, everything you need to know. You also get like alerts of the DH Unplugged show and all sorts of things that are happening from Trigger Charge to Trigger Point Research will kind of flow through there a bit, so you'll see what's happening. But then you'll get the major announcements that when this is coming. And this looks really good. And I'll give you all the details about the actual performance, what it's done, how it's done, drawdowns. We're going to have a whole thing prepared, so just keep a lookout for that. And then other than that, we're going to have some great guests on coming up. I'm very excited about the next number of months and the people that we've been talking to, some of your old favorites, of course, and some new fellas and girls that are going to be bringing us some good information on a variety of topics. So lots to look forward to. But we are going to keep it short. I mentioned a lot of stocks today that hope you to look into and put on that list, not the resolution list, but on your watch list and your commitment list. You work on your commitments and you work on your plan and you keep it very tight for 2014. You can find me over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com, horowitzandcompany.com. Of course, DH Unplugged, which is airs on Wednesdays with John C. Dvorak. Trigger Charts for TradeStation, and also Trigger Point Research, which is a newsletter subscription of giving you stock breakdowns on a regular basis right to your email or to text. So all that's available. Just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You'll see all of that, okay? Thanks for joining me. Wishing you a happy and a healthy new year. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented that should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.